I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go on a Thursday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon. We are all back in studio. Training camp has wrapped up in St. Joe. In fact, the Chiefs had a very light practice earlier than normal in St. Joe today. That's why we're not up there. And it is about ready for on I-29. There would be a bunch of really nice cars driving back towards Kansas City here in about 45 minutes or an hour. Or so there will be a caravan of Chiefs players making their way back to Kansas City. And then they tomorrow morning or so will leave towards Tampa. And then Saturday night, of course, preseason game number 2, Chiefs Bucks right here on 96.5 The Fan. So we will get a chance to talk more about the second preseason game tomorrow on the show. We'll have a fan club Friday and all that. The reason why I'm already mentioning tomorrow a little bit, we have a short one today because the Royals do have a day game as they continue their series trying to take care of the A's yet again. And boy, the Royals record is not good, but the A's are so bad. They just give you games away.
Facing their bullpen. Cow. Is this what it's been like for other teams all year? Maybe. Against the Royals bullpen?
Maybe.
Because it's been a delight. The Royals have been down in both games and seemingly out in both games. And then eventually some reliever has to come in and the Royals have a 7-run seventh is what I think it was to eventually take home the crown yesterday. Chance for the sweep today. I mean, it is crazy in a lot of ways. But yeah, thanks A's bullpen, making for fun. I'll be on Vern's pregame show. I'm on a 3-bet losing streak, even though I was in first place for a long time. I think I might be behind Speck now.
I don't know. I think you still might be up there.
It's close.
I think there's only 3 of us in the black for Vern's bets this year.
Oh, okay. I got to try to get, I'm going longer odds today than I probably
Are you?
Should.
Okay.
I did a lot of research in fairness. I probably spent way longer than you think somebody would for an individual bet. Because I bet every single, I always tell people this, but anytime I make a bet on Vern's pregame show.
You make the bet.
I make the bet. I like to be in it with you. And so, you know, I did 15, 20 minutes of research trying to decide which thing I was going to bet today. And I came up with the one.
So that's coming up at noon today. Vern's On Deck show as the Royals take on the A's. Don't forget, you guys can interact with us on the Jay Southland's host service text line, 913-586-7965, 913-586-7965. Video stream up and running on YouTube, Twitch, X, and Facebook. No more figurines for a while until we're out of studio.
Is next week.
We are in Vegas. I guess that's true. Next Thursday, Friday, the figurines.
Yeah, are you gonna living it up?
Are you going to attempt the super glue by then? On the head that is falling off.
I think so. Yes, I will try it. If you want to bring some in, Cody, I will. But that's the thing, though, is that
now has to be. Maybe we should just leave it. I don't know.
Is the end of it small enough where it's gonna? It's not gonna bleed over. Like I'm not gonna have super glue falling into the figurine because
probably will. But that's what makes it funnier, okay. I guess. Mm-hmm. We'll try to fix it.
As long as it doesn't make it worse, I suppose.
I don't think it can be worse. His entire head's detached.
That's right. That's exactly.
We'll give it a try. But you're right. We will be in Vegas next Thursday and Friday. If you guys are going to be out there, we'll actually start getting there Wednesday. The shows will be Thursday and Friday.
We had somebody text in already yesterday or 2 days ago on the show saying they're going to be in Vegas next weekend already. So they're going to stop.
Contest weekend?
The ballroom is open for all the radios. Anybody can stop in. So if you happen to be in Vegas, like one of our listeners are going to be next week, sign up for Circus Survivor with us over at Circus Sports. But just stop by and say hello. You can actually hang out during our show for the full 4-hour show. We'll be on from 8 a.m. to noon Pacific time next Thursday.
Make us look good. That Wisconsin station who's out there every year. They've always got like a whole crowd.
Yeah, they
have like 25 people watching their show last year.
Yeah, that was crazy. It's not a sports station either. It's just it's a music station in Wisconsin that is on the radio row for Circus Sports like we are. And yeah, they probably had 20, 25 listeners flew in from Wisconsin to just hang out with their station. I was like, wow, good for them.
If you guys are out in Vegas next week, come by and see us for a little contest weekend.
All right, let's get you caught up on a couple things that have happened at camp, though, today. We will hear some of the comments from Andy, or at least pass along some of the comments from Andy. But we know the Chiefs did sign another offensive tackle today. They need some depth there. One of the two tackles they had in for a tryout on Wednesday. So Kellen Deesh, I don't know if that's how you pronounce his last name.
Guy might get on the field on Saturday
They need bodies at the offensive line right now with some of the injuries. We do know that, as expected, Josh Simmons and Trey Smith are not going to play on Saturday. Anybody that's paid attention this week understands why that's the case. Trey Smith continues to deal with the hip injury, and then Josh Simmons hasn't practiced in a couple days due to a back injury. So it makes sense to hold those guys out. But overall, now that camp has wrapped up, What do you think is the number one takeaway, or most, how about this, the most important thing for the season that happened at camp? Because I think those are two different things, right? There's takeaways, but there's like, what do you actually think will matter the most for the 2026 Kansas City Chiefs?
So I don't feel like I can give the answer Khalil Bitson there, because I don't think he's going to start as the week one starter. So he might very well just be a break glass in case of emergency answer. And so that just doesn't feel like the answer I'm supposed to give in the meantime. I think it's probably one of two things. One could very easily be Cyrus Allen. If he actually turns into a viable contributing member of, let's just say a contributing member of the wide receiver staff, a 500-yard guy, you know how much better the wide receiver unit looks if all of a sudden the fourth guy is a 500-yard guy, which before the season it was no one? Literally, it was just Tyquan Thornton and then a sharp cliff to nowhere. If you tell me now they have four contributing members and Travis Kelce looks good and the rest of that is in line, then we probably are talking a little bit and there's probably something to be had there. I think the single biggest development that I'm sure about is Peter Woods. I think in the sense that they found a defensive lineman who can be a day one contributor in the middle of the defense is the thing that will single-handedly make the biggest impact this season that I'm sure about. Because it opens up things for Jones, it opens up things for Karloftis, it makes life easier for R. Mason and others. If he is a day one guy who matters and gives snaps that matters, I think that that's probably the thing that will see the single biggest impact for the 2026 Chiefs.
So let me just start with the obvious. It's the low-hanging fruit, though. But it's that Patrick Mahomes looks like Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah,
that's the most important thing for the 2026 season. The 3+ weeks or whatever it was that they've been in St. Joe, that we were up there with our shows, he looks like Patrick Mahomes. And I understand there's a difference when he's actually going to be tackled, and we have not seen that. Nobody can get near him at training camp, so there's a different element. But I'm just talking about him under center or in shotgun, rolling out to his right, rolling out to his left, whatever it may be, he looks like Patrick Mahomes, the two-time MVP. That's the best thing for the Chiefs leaving camp. And the fact that he didn't have any setback. That's honestly, that's the number one thing. Now, if we pivot away from that, that's very obvious.
Because Mahomes is always the answer. Anytime, like, who's the most important player? Who needs to stay the healthiest?
I am with you a little bit on Peter Woods, just because my biggest concern is the defensive line and how this team is going to get after the quarterback. And so if you tell me that at some point this year, whether it's week one or by week eight, that Peter Woods is a difference maker in terms of on third downs, causing the pocket to collapse, which leads to more sacks for Jones or Karloftis or whoever is going to be on that other side, whether it's sometimes Ogba, R. Mason, Thomas, Gelati, etc. I'm with you. Peter Woods could be a difference maker. He's a guy that could change my view on, do I think this team has a chance to be a 10-win team or up to an 11-plus win team if they can get after the quarterback? So I'm with you there. I still think, though, the biggest development of camp that we didn't already know going in. We already knew Kenneth Walker was going to be a difference maker. Now, seeing it in person, it's great to see that they have a guy that can cut back and has the vision, but we kind of knew what they were getting. So I don't think he's eligible for this answer. I'll go with Cyrus Allen. I mean, it's just the fact that there's a chance, even if I think people need to temper their expectations, that he's not going to suddenly become Puka Nacua right away. But the fact that there is a guy that clearly has a different skill set, that clearly is different than some of the other camp darlings we've had, that there is a real chance that he turns into something for this offense this year, and if not, in 2027. That absolutely, for me, was the biggest development, because when we all showed up in St. Joe, maybe you were excited to watch Cyrus Allen. Nobody, I think, felt on day one of camp that we would wrap up camp and now be talking about some people thinking that he's going to be the number one wide receiver in a year. That's a crazy turnaround, right?
I mean, again, for the long term, he's the answer, no question, I think, in a lot of ways. Because in the long term, if they did find the number one, you're right. But even in the short term, that could matter.
We do have some breaking news on the negative side, though. Some more reports coming out of St. Joe. We just mentioned the defensive line. My number one concern, how do they get after the quarterback? Well, it just got a little tougher because reports are that Ashton Gelati ruptured his plantar fascia.
Oh, that's why he left with a foot injury?
Yeah. Yikes. Yeah, this is a guy that we were wondering, could he take a step forward in his second year? But it's a, quote, rupture plantar fascia. It's a tear. Now, we don't know what the exact prognosis is on that. Also, Jeff Caldwell has a hyperextended knee, but who cares? plantar fascia for
how long does that keep you out?
I mean, I don't, no clue. No idea. I mean, if you told me it's the season, I would believe it. If you told me it was 2 months, I'd believe it. I don't know, guys.
I think it's fair to guess or assume 2 months, though. For a tear like that, I would assume it's at
least
2 months.
He's a pup list candidate now, isn't he? Can he still be on the pup list? Can you still put him on, right? Wouldn't he to free up a roster spot?
I would think so.
So wouldn't you probably start him on the pup list or IR, I guess it would be for, as an IR also a 6 week deal? I have to look up the, I get confused on the difference.
I mean, even more so now, obviously that means, wow. I mean, I know you guys are going to talk about it, but R. Mason Thomas, the importance of that. And then, I mean, even FAU and all the other things that could come from that too.
Yeah, that's a huge loss though. Even if it's a month, certainly if it's the whole, you know, a whole season, this is a guy you were expecting to take a step forward. And it makes the, frankly, it makes the Emmanuel Ogba signing that much more important. Not that I'm expecting Ogba, Cody, to go out there and have six sacks, but I think we discussed Ashton Gelati as a rotational piece that showed promise last year that maybe we were hoping could elevate his game to a five sack guy this year. Well, now you're needing a ton from R. Mason Thomas immediately. You're going to ask way more from Ogba than you were planning on. And I think it's a fair question. Do they need to go out
and find a defensive lineman?
And find somebody else?
It does seem, depending
on what their timeline is.
So he left practice early yesterday, or 2 days ago, right? When he left with the foot injury. And so maybe they already knew this when the Chiefs assistant general manager spoke to the media yesterday. And he said, we got ways of freeing up money if we need to. You and I have long said, I don't want them touching Chris Jones' number. But there's an extension for Creed Humphrey. There's extensions for other people. All that other stuff certainly can play a factor, I guess, at least on this end. But when you look at it, it's like they needed time. I think it could be like it sounds like you'd be lucky to probably get him back halfway through the season, maybe. So like that part could be there based on the quick research. It's funny. I searched plantar fascia rupture NFL and the two that popped up immediately were Peyton Manning did this once when he was playing quarterback, but it was only a partial tear. And Sean McVay, while coaching, did it once, of all things.
And everybody heals differently, but and people are bringing up Kyle Isbell. It's a baseball player versus a defensive lineman. I don't know if we can make the same comp. I mean, at bare minimum, I think we all recognize he's not playing at least until October, and that's being conservative. You know what I mean? I think that is best case scenario, but this could linger. Now, the reason why I'm confused on the timeline is Andy Reid called all the injuries falling under nicks and bruises. Okay, ruptured plantar fascia is not a nick or a bruise.
Yeah, no chance.
I don't think all the injuries fall under that category. With all due respect, whatsoever. You want to say that Josh Simmons has his back injuries a nick or a bruise? Fine. Rupturing your plantar fascia is not just no big deal thing.
Funnily enough, Kyle Isbell did it this season for the Royals.
Well, I know that's what the text line was saying. Six to 8 weeks, but it's a baseball player. It's different.
Yeah.
I'm guessing
running and jumping and those things. He plays center field. So like maybe that's a reasonable timeline.
As of right now, my very, very limited knowledge of the situation or anything, I will say, I think Halloween would be an accurate earliest time to see Ashton Gelati.
Look, I'll be honest. He was not very high on my list of guys I thought were going to be like the most meaningful guys in the defensive line, but he was definitely in the rotation. You know who this is the most important for? Like the person who has to step up most in this news. Former first round pick Felix Anudike Uzama.
That's a hell of an opportunity for him.
That is legitimately the player who should be counted on to do more in this scenario. You're a former first round pick. You've been in the NFL for years. You're playing for a future contract with some other team in the NFL. You got all the motivation in the world to put two good damn months on paper and actually do something with it. And so that part I feel like is of importance. And yeah, I mean, yeah, that's not a Nixon Bruce situation, but unfortunately for Gelati,
hopefully, I mean, if there is a such thing as a mild rupture, again, this is without, none of us are medical experts. So
I don't feel like mild and rupture, that's an oxymoron part of that, but that's fine.
That's what I mean. So like if it's the milder end of a ruptured plantar fascia, as weird as that might sound to say, what does that look like? So we'll obviously try to get some more information throughout the show today. We're on till noon. And if not, I'm sure tomorrow we'll have some more information and maybe get one of our medical friends on the show to find out a little bit more about what the timeline realistically is. But if you're just joining us, some breaking news from the final day of Chiefs camp. We know it's been a couple days for Ashton Gelati not practicing, and now Andy Reid saying that it's a ruptured plantar fascia for Ashton Gelati, and that's why we were mentioning some of the names that have to step up, even if it is on the milder end. You know, we're talking about you know, the fact that you brought up Felix, I agree with you that it's an opportunity for him, but I think we have to be the expectation of what you're going to get from him. I mean, I'm not expecting anything, but you're right. It's a golden opportunity for him to completely change the narrative on his career. I still think the first guy that is obvious that has to step up here. You're asking now your second round pick and R. Mason Thomas immediately to become a contributor
and to play more snaps than probably you had hoped for in the early.
And my guess is Emmanuel Ogba is going to play a hell of a lot more than we ever thought.
Oh, I don't know.
Unless they pull somebody off the waiver wire from a team.
Von Miller.
Well, somebody that gets cut on the final cut on the only cut down day here in a week or two. From another team, the Chiefs have a top 10 pick in the waiver order.
Which former Chief is a free agent is really all I should be asking myself. who's out on the street that used to play here?
And Joey Bosa is still a free agent, I think.
He is.
He's not a former Chief, right? Or did he sign somewhere?
Cormer?
I don't think so.
No, he hasn't.
He was on the Bills last year,
retire,
right?
Though.
Current free agent defensive ends are Hassan Reddick. It's a who's who of guys who used to be good. Hassan Reddick, Joey Bosa, Leonard Floyd, Uter Gross Matos, Kyle Van Noy. I mean, that's kind of the end of the list of people.
I mean, I think Bosa's worth a call on. I just think that there was a report, I believe, that he might just be done playing football. That's why nobody signed him yet.
Yeah.
Just because of the injury.
Well, these guys
history.
Are all out there for a reason, right? There's something.
It's
either
August 20th.
It's either health, age, you know what, there's a reason why you're still unsigned at this point if you're a vet. I think it's very fair to say. So we'll see over the next couple of days how this plays out, but significant news for I think one of the biggest question marks on the team already.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and again, defensive line, I'd be more worried if it was one of the guys I was counting on even more, but I don't want to pretend like this is nothing either. He was obviously going to be in the rotation amongst the defensive line. So we'll have to pay attention to it. Speaking of injury, I was thinking more about, like, I've been watching the Royals the last couple of nights. They've just been entertaining. The A's stink, and the full lineup's been back, even though Jack Caglione left with a sore ankle in the game last night. Salvador Perez's elbow clearly isn't right. Is that, like, permanent? What is their plan next season for him? Is he catching 50 games and DHing the rest? Is he still catching 80 games? Like, genuinely, I would love to know what their plan for Salvador Perez is. Because I'll tell you right now, he's not honoring the no-trade clause, and the Royals aren't cutting him. So he's on this team. He's not going to want to be traded anywhere, and the Royals aren't going to get rid of him. So, and they shouldn't, based on the amount of money they owe him and, you know, what he's done for the organization, frankly. So the question is, what would you do with Salvador Perez, knowing where things are in the injury front? Because I don't feel like it's an easy thing to figure out on that end.
I mean, I think it's an extension and even maybe more so of how they've treated him the last month or so, which is going to be more off days. Obviously, Carter Jensen needs to play, you know, a huge chunk.
He needs to be the everyday starter. Start more games than Salvi, right?
So that's it needs to just be an extension of what we've seen the last month or two, which is Carter Jensen's behind the dish majority of the time, if not every day. And it's more days off for Salvador Perez. It's the lineup that we're seeing where Salvi's, you know, batting, what, sixth, seventh in the order. That's what it needs to be moving forward. But more off days even than he got this year.
I will say this is part of the trouble, though, is that for Carter Jensen, when you have a catcher who hits at his level, traditionally you would like them to catch a few less days in order to preserve what is a very important bat. And you would like to sneak in some DH days. This year, he has caught 74 games and DH'd just 41. I do not think that was the original plan. It wasn't going to be a 2-1 scenario. It was going to be like 50-50, or they were going to give him more days off. Look, he's a much worse hitter when he DHs this year, of all things. This is a really weird split. You ready for this? As a catcher this year, he hits 244 with a 321 on base and a 779 OPS. When he DHs, he's hitting 179 with a 266 on base and a 566 OPS in 41 games. Jeez. Stinks when he DHs. We talk about Jack Caglione when he plays first. What the hell's going on with Carter when he's not catching? Hmm. Not in the game mentally, not the same, doesn't feel like he's got as much going on. I can't explain it. It's a small enough sample size, I'd say.
Yeah, he's been striking out a lot here recently, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a stretch of games right now. I mean, he struck out again last night. I can't remember. I was talking to somebody else about this, one of my friends, actually, last night about it. And, yeah, last five games, he has one strikeout in four of them. So he's got five strikeouts in his last six, I think.
Yeah. Well, but in fairness, and he's been hitting a little bit worse, but his overall season numbers are so fine.
I understand. We're just talking about right now. No. Carter Jensen's been a bright spot of the 2026 Royals. I'm just saying currently where we're at.
But that might also be because he's catching too much. Again, this goes back to the same thing. very few, I will tell you, very few catchers in baseball play the amount he plays, right? Or Salvador Perez plays, probably more importantly. People don't catch that much. It's crazy. It's more than you would traditionally like it. That's why I'm asking. I think it might still need to be 80-80 with Salvi behind the dish and just hope that he's a better hitter, protect Carter Jensen from some of the other injury stuff. And look, I saw someone said he's only hitting 221. I got bad news for you. If you haven't been following catching, Carter Jensen is one of the five most productive hitting catchers in Major League Baseball this season. So you can cite all you want to me. He's hitting 221 with a 303 on base. I'm just going to be very clear to you. Carter Jensen is hitting better than almost all catchers in Major League Baseball. You gotta forget about what the numbers look like for Aaron Judge or other guys and understand he's a catcher at 22 years old who has now played 119 games and caught 74 of them, which is higher than it was ever supposed to be because Salvador Perez's elbow injury and because Salvador Perez was bad. Like, that's why I feel like next year's plan should be an 80-game, 80-game split. Maybe that's a bad way to look at it, but I'm looking closer to, like, maybe what the plan was for him in, 2 years ago, right? Maybe not when it was Carter Jensen, but Salvador Perez and the way he was splitting time with Freddie Fermin before he left town. That's all. We did get an update, by the way. I saw... Okay. So we had talked, maybe it was 2 weeks ago on the show, that Akron was going to do this whole big raffle contest for a chance to help script the first 10 plays of their opening game. Genius.
Great idea. You had to buy season tickets in order to do it. It led to them selling out, I think, on season tickets. They were selling more suites. And so people all across the country were buying tickets. And some pretty notable media personalities were getting in on this. I think Pat McAfee bought tickets. Big Cat from Barstool bought tickets in the hopes of getting a chance to call the opening drive. Well, Akron yesterday announced the finalists. So they're smart. They're trying to drag this out. 10 finalists for the first drive. Offensive coordinator position, if you will. The finalists include Big Cat from Barstool, of course.
How?
And also a very popular college football content creator that some of you might follow, Bordeaux or whatever.
Bordeaux.
I mean, whatever.
It's oh, really? Spelled exactly like the wine.
Oh, that guy.
He's in there?
Anyway.
All right.
So,
and it said that, I will say this, it said it's only 9 finalists because the 10th guy pulled out. Why'd you enter the raffle if you didn't know when to actually call the play?
Anybody that bought season tickets was entered. So maybe someone truly is an Akron fan and just like, I don't want to call the plays. I don't know why you would say no. Who knows? It could be someone that just doesn't want
that.
The only
thing I can think of is somebody did it out of a joke, but they're too far. Like, they're never going to go to the game. They just did it to be a part of the deal.
I would fly to Akron, Ohio to do this. Are you kidding me?
I'd do it tomorrow if they said, we'll let you call 10 plays.
I think what's happening is, one, they can't convince me. They said the athletic department did not pull the names. They said the accounting department did. Or the accounting school, I think, did at the university.
But of all
whatever.
Things they called
I'm convinced something's up there. Now, I don't think he's going to win it. I think they're smart. He's a top 10 finalist. It gets them to talk more about it on Barstool. Big Cat can keep talking about it. And then eventually somebody else wins it.
Or, I don't think he should win it, yeah.
Yeah, I hope he actually doesn't win it. But it's smart of Akron to make him a finalist, honestly, because it gets people talking about it more.
Yeah, for sure.
And Big Cat's defense, people were giving him a hard time, obviously, about it. And they were like, what the hell are you going to do with season tickets to Akron? And he said he donated them to a non-for-profit called Tickets for Kids. So it's like he bought the season tickets to Akron and then just donated them to a charity.
Which
saying,
is great. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, you guys use the tickets. It's fine. Because Big Cat's not going to go out to every Akron football game and do that. And they should have better attendance, you would think, right? If they're just giving the tickets away, there'll be people who are there.
I would presume. I think
it's going to look fishy if he wins it.
Yeah, which is the problem I think I'd have with it.
I don't know. I mean,
he might be totally, he might be clean as a whistle in this whole thing, and he might actually win it legitimately as anybody else would have. But it does come across as a little bit fishy when he's obviously Big Cat's a Wisconsin guy. If he wins it, like, what are you doing? Like, what exactly role do you have in this? Are you doing, he did more as a, yeah, sure, I'd love to do this more than I'm an Akron fan or whatever. I'm a student at Akron or whatever the case is.
I guess part of it is you did, this is why it looks fishy. You did a thing to get attention for your program and sell tickets. This Big Cat winning would seem to be another thing in that category of things, right?
But people would think, again, I think
it would just be two on the nose.
Yes. It's look, you make him a finalist, fair, you get fair. The attention. Him winning it, everybody on earth is going to say, oh, you intentionally picked this guy. Yeah. I think it's a terrible look if he wins it, but they're getting a ton of pub for it. So at this point in time, it's just very smart.
Have they announced that game's going to be, that first game's going to be sold out?
I'm sure it is. Now, will it be sold out as in tickets sold And how many people bought season tickets? Like, is Pat McAfee making his way to Akron, Ohio? No, he's going to be somewhere else. So there will be people that bought four tickets, two tickets, whatever, that just don't show up to a single game this year.
Man,
I guess they could sell our tickets to somebody in
the
Akron.
The problem, though, too, is that there's too many good games early in the season where if you were a school and you wanted game day to be there, this would be cool to have. But obviously, game day is not going to Akron.
No, they open up their season
game against Robert Morris. It's just not happening.
Yeah, they open up on the road at Wake Forest, and then their first home game, which is when this whole thing is taking place, is against Robert Morris, as you said, on the 12th. And then they get into, you know, the rest.
And on the week of the 12th, obviously, that's Mizzou KU. I think Texas is playing Ohio State that week. Like, there's no way that game day would ever be there, obviously.
So that's an update on the Akron call your own plays contest.
Did you guys enter? I don't even know if you guys entered.
I did not buy tickets.
I did not.
So once you guys told, so when I saw it was just $80, I said, oh, that'd be a fun show thing. But then you guys informed me that it's $80 for the ticket, and then I would have to donate, what was it, $250 to the Akron like NIL fund? And I was
Yeah, they want to build the NIL. Yeah.
I'm not doing that. Smart on their part, but I'm not doing that. If it was just an $80 ticket to get entered, it'd be a fun show bit if all of a sudden we were flying to Akron, Ohio to go call the opening drive. It'd be amazing.
That would be pretty epic.
It would be amazing.
You got to call a reverse or a flea flicker. Again, hook and ladder. You got to call one weirdo play, I'm telling you.
They said, though, again, it's in consultation with the head coach. You guys have to script out the play. So he's got to agree to it. Now, you might be able to talk him into a trick play, but he's not going to run five trick plays on the drive. You know, like, it's not going to make a mockery of the entire thing. All right, up next, though, let's get back into the Chiefs as camp wrapped up today in St. Joe. Let's talk more about Rashee Rice and a plan if a certain thing happens for him and what the backup quarterback spot might look like. I know for this year, it shouldn't matter, hopefully, but it might be a good thing in the future. All right, back here on Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with your reminder, Royals baseball today. So we'll hand things off to Vern at noon for Vern's On Deck show. We'll get back into some of the breaking news of the day. Spent a good chunk of the first segment discussing Ashton Gelati. We now know, according to Andy Reid, the reason why he's been out for a couple days, he unfortunately has a ruptured plantar fascia. I don't know which foot that would be, left or right.
I think there's one in both of them.
No, but you are correct. There is a plantar fascia in both your left and right foot.
Matt Foster posted a video. Can't remember which one it was either.
I guess it doesn't matter, right? I guess ultimately it doesn't matter. There is a video that Matt Foster did post. I'm watching it right now. We'll be able to find out here in just a second.
Apparently it's the play that he did it that he got
wrong. It's his right. Yeah. Yep. It's his right foot. The plantar fascia in his right foot. We don't know a timeline on it. I think it's safe to say he's not playing week one of the season, though. At bare minimum.
Yeah. I mean, Andy called them nicks and bruises, but I would assume, based on the way they've been moving around the defensive line, this would be an easy way to just shuffle, maybe pup list, and then figure out from there, depending on what needs to be done.
The Mac problem did a quick Google search, and it was 6 to 12 weeks.
Omar Norman Lott would also be a candidate for the pup list, you would think, based on when he
I think that's a given,
When he may be available for the team later in the year. So they're missing two guys in the defensive line who you were hoping to be contributors in 2027. Now, in fairness, Omar Norman Lott, at no point this offseason did they plan on week one contribution from him. I think it matters for FAU, Ogba, in probably even more from R. Mason Thomas, Tonga, and Woods. You know, it goes even further down the defensive line, not just the edge guys, but some of the other guys they'll be counting on, obviously, to contribute. So they'll do that. The other part about this is like the offseason injuries and these ticky-tack injuries, I feel like are going to have an impact on the season this year. I'm not fully online in the sense that I think Rashee Rice looks like overweight or like people are like, you know, making the jokes that like guy looks like he's moving in quicksand. He doesn't look to be anywhere close to game speed yet, I think is probably fair, but he was never, and I think this is probably important, he was never like a burner. Like, Rashee Rice wasn't out there just making everybody look like they were standing still either. He was good in the middle part of the areas, good at getting open, good in zone coverage, similar to that as Travis Kelce. But I do think I'm kind of mentally preparing for maybe a bit of a slow start from him because the offseason knee surgery, the slow start to training camp, the unavailability for a portion of it. He's got 3 more weeks of practice to get fully up there, but I think it might take 1 or 2 weeks before Rice starts to kind of look closer to himself. Which isn't the end of the world when you're having an off-season surgery, but like I just don't plan on him hitting the ground running, I guess, is what I would say.
I don't think it will be a slow start.
You're gonna be fine.
I don't think, you know, the football shape stuff, to me, he has gotten through that already during camp. The first day or so that he was actually out at practice, you could tell the Chiefs were intentionally having him not get many plays off. Like, hey, he was leaving to go on the sideline. They're like, no, get back in the huddle. Like, I think they got him in shape. It doesn't take much. I'll go to Dana Hughes' comments yesterday, former Chiefs wide receiver, when he joined us about that, where you can have guys that don't show up in shape at camp. And by the end of camp, back in, he's talking about during his days, at camp, those guys were in unbelievable shape. So Rashee Rice, yes, we all know he had to rehab the knee while he was in and out of jail, unfortunately. But when you look at camp and being in football shape from day one to 3.5 weeks in St. Joe, it's not hard to get in shape at a position like wide receiver. This is not the same as like when we made jokes back in the day of Kelvin Benjamin overeating and Deebo Samuel a year or so ago. That's not what has happened here with Rashee Rice. I disagree. I think he will be ready to go to start the season. Now, the part I'm most concerned about with Rashee Rice on the field is the drops. And has he cleared that up? Because he did have a bunch of drops yesterday at practice as well. That's way more concerning than like, hey, is he just in shape and running the routes the proper way or able to finish the route the proper way? I'm more worried about the drops that we saw at camp.
Look, the truth is, no, it's not secured away because he's still doing it. And I guess this goes back to, like, you mentioned what Danan said. I would mention what Nate said, too, when he was talking about, like, Eric Bieniemy has to yell at him every single day to finish a play. Like, go all the way through the whistle, Rashee. And I wonder if some of that's just from, like, exhaustion. Like, he's not, you hope it's not effort.
Yeah.
And then
but
it's
he's
just
got
like,
another three. If you still,
does.
I don't think
he does
he is,
have another 3 weeks.
If you think he's not in shape still, and I disagree on it, but if that's the case, he's got 3 more weeks before that's, you understand? This just because camp, as you know, I know you know this, but just remind people just because training camp ended today does not mean that they're just, that they're still practicing after the preseason game on Saturday. They're just not in St. Joe anymore.
I will say I hope I'm right and you're not. Because I don't think he looks quite as swift as normal. So, like, I hope for our sake that I'm right in a weird way. Only because if you're right and he's up to shape and he's all the good, then I don't think he looks as spry as he used to. I don't feel like he's moving with the same intention as I am accustomed to out of Rashee Rice. And again, that's not to say that I think he just looks terrible. But I don't think he looks quite the same as I'm used to in previous training camps. And I feel like he's still got some work to do in order to like get back to. I mean, right now,
he was
let's
be clear. He was never just this guy that looked, wow, look how quick he is off the line of scrimmage. That was never his game.
No doubt.
Are we not going to know until they play a game, though?
Because sure.
Because I think, Cody, to what you're saying, in those clips, when he's going up against Mansoor or even Noah Williams, I think to an extent, there's no separation. And I don't know if that is because Mansoor Delane is that dude, like we kind of expect him to be, as much as it is Rashee's just out of shape or hasn't quite caught back up to where he expects to be at.
He was really bad against man coverage last year.
Yeah.
I think what's tough about it is like right now, we still assume that Rashee Rice is the most important wide receiver because if we all ranked right now, all right, let's guess who has the most targets on the Chiefs this year. We all guessing Rice?
Should be.
He's been on pace at least when he's played.
He's been well above everybody anytime he's on the football field. He's been ahead of Travis Kelce when he's on the football field. We should safely assume that this season, if Rashee Rice is available for 17 games, he will easily lead the team in targets. Like, I'm not even sure it would be all that close of a race unless Cyrus Allen really is Puka Nacua or something. Then it's just probably, Travis Kelce turns back the clock 10 years. It's hard to imagine a world in which he isn't the leader. And I guess that's why I just understand. I'm probably being nitpicky in fairness, but it is because he is their number one wide receiver and you kind of want him up and going from jump right away, looking the same, looking like Rice when he's on the field in the previous two seasons, when he's healthy and finding ways to at least get yards,
I'm
get
just
catches,
saying,
you know, those things.
And you absolutely could end up being right. I'm just saying it's interesting how we've both have talked about this season and how we've talked about the Broncos game. None of us have given official predictions for week one, but if we had a topic earlier this week too, you say you think the defense is going to start slow. You're now telling me you think Rice is going to start slow.
I like
the
schedule though.
How the hell are you picking the Chiefs to win in week one? You better be picking the Broncos to win the way you're talking, which is fine. I'm just saying like everything you've said this week would tell me you absolutely think the Chiefs are losing week one. You think the defense is starting slow, I'm not even saying you're wrong, but that Rashee Rice is not going to start great. I mean, how are they winning week one, Cody?
So, and I guess just Mahomes. I don't think Mahomes will start slow. Okay. So I guess that's worth. In fairness, I'd have to, you know, like when we get closer to it, obviously I make those predictions. I don't think it's out of the question to predict them to lose.
Totally. No, they're only 2.5-point favorites anyway, right?
It's definitely not out of question. That's at least, and this is something I've pointed out too. The one good thing about these things are their schedule favors a slow by their state. And they can win and
they need
not
a quick
be
start,
up to
though.
Speed.
Like, because they got to take advantage of the schedule.
Sure. But I think they can win games. Like, I think the defense can be a bit rocky, or Rice can be a little off kilter and still win football games because Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, their ability to win close games. Like, I just give them the benefit that against the Cardinals, even if the defense isn't up to speed.
The Cardinals game is like week 10 anyway. Week two, it's the Colts, though, to your point. Yeah. Against the Colts, you can get
by. They don't have to play their A game.
But in week one against the Broncos, I'm not so sure.
I think that's the one game maybe in their first 5 weeks where you're like, before the bye, 6 weeks before. Because really, when I say slow start, I pretty much mean before the bye.
Okay, so here's just for refresh. I know you know, but just to refresh everybody's memory. They open up, Monday night, gets the Broncos at home. Home to the Colts, at Miami, at the Raiders, then the bye. So that's what, you know, even if in that scenario, worst case scenario, they need to be 3-1.
Their bye's in week 5?
Yeah.
You don't remember that?
I didn't think it was that early.
Is why I guess whenever we find out more about this Ashton Gelati injury, you know, what's the timeline for him? Is there a chance that the bye helps him in that scenario if it means that he's in that time frame? Without knowing more, as I said, I'm guessing it's a late October thing for Gelati at the earliest, but who knows? Maybe I'm way off. I hope it's all of a sudden it's week 3 and he's good to go magically.
I will say the only thing, and I'm not saying the Ashton Gelati news is nothing, because it's definitely not nothing. That'd be too unfair. On the Chiefs defensive line, where does he rank as most important defensive lineman? I probably would have had him behind R. Mason Thomas anyway. Maybe that's a bad way of looking at
it. Not in week one, I wouldn't.
I would have had him
long term and for the season.
Okay.
Not in week one. You're asking a lot now.
That's fair. I was just ranking guys like for this season.
Yeah, for the season and long term, of course, it's R. Mason Thomas. You draft him the second round, and the speed rusher capability that he has, they don't have anybody else that can really get to that level. I just think in week one, you're now asking a lot of R. Mason Thomas.
R. Mason's going to start then, right?
Yeah,
it would have been Gelati.
I would think so.
But an active members, let's just call Gelati in this, he would have been behind Jones, Tonga, Woods, Karloftis. I would have had him even still, I think, slightly behind R. Mason and then Gelati. So he's an important player, and he was more important than FAU or Ogba or some of these other guys who were further down the depth chart. But, I mean, at least they actually have some other names on the defensive line for the first time in a million years. This is why they spent their second round pick and their first round pick on defensive linemen. They can cover it slightly better this year than they could in a number of other years, right?
Yeah. And last year he had 1.5 sack. So I don't want to make it seem like Gelati is coming off a 7-sack year and it's like, oh my gosh. But we were all expecting Gelati to take the leap from 1.5. Could he be a 4-sack guy this year?
I think at one point we were hoping that he would play more because Charles Omenihu was struggling and, you know, the rest of the line was struggling, where I think we all had been talking about on the show that we wanted him to get more of a look.
And here's the other secondary part of this injury that we haven't mentioned. It seems minor, but I wonder how it'll impact Saturday. Now that you know Gelati's going to miss some time, you want to see R. Mason Thomas Saturday, but you got to be careful about playing him because he might be, as we're saying, he might be your starting defensive end. Emmanuel Ogba, like some of these guys that now are going to be asked to do more, how much do you want to even play them? But R. Mason Thomas at the same time does need some more reps if he's going to be the guy. It's a tough juggling act.
He's
going to
get some run, for sure.
Most of it is ticky-tack stuff, as in they'll recover it within the time before the season starts. Not the Gelati one, but the other ones. Shut the whole preseason down. They got just enough injury problems at just enough important places. It's like for Mahomes. Three of the starting offensive linemen are going to play. Don't put them behind backup offensive linemen. We're not nuts. Borderline, I'm not so sure Justin Fields should play. He will. But like R. Mason, Ogba, like people who I'm counting on, like FAU, I don't need him. I don't need FAU playing in a preseason game, Drew. It can be all the guys' names you don't even know. It could be the players on the roster that, like, unless you're a huge college football fan from the last 10 years, you're like, who? It can be all of those guys for the next two games, as far as I'm concerned. It's just enough injury risk that in a lot of different positions, corner, defensive line, quarterback, offensive line, it's like spread out everywhere. I'm not real interested in risking much in the preseason.
Yeah, I still just think if it's a longer timetable, and we're talking about Pupless IR for Gelati, I wonder on the waiver wire I think they're going to have to bring somebody in. It doesn't mean they're bringing in a guy that's going to start over everybody. I just mean they're going to have to bring somebody in, I think, for that defensive line rotation.
I mean,
they like to rotate plenty of different bodies in there on the defensive line to begin with. And then now you're telling me that in week one against the Broncos, I think it's very fair to say you're not going to have Gelati.
I wonder if they.
It's going to be Malik Herring or something. Is he a free agent?
No, not that.
Someone mentioned Charles Domenihu on the text line.
Some former chief.
Oh, he didn't have anything left. He's done. He's done.
Because this normally, because it's weird, the way the preseason works now, too, is traditionally you would have like cut days, like there'd be multiple cut days, where instead you just have one massive one. Do they wait until they find out, well, who got cut, who didn't, and then they just fire on the waiver wire, or they look at a practice squad and try to snag somebody off of that, or whatever the case is?
Aren't they eighth on the waiver order right now?
Yeah, they're relatively high.
So that gives them a decent chance at claiming some defensive lineman maybe that another team cuts.
Are there going to be, do we know, I haven't paid any attention, are there going to be any like surprise cuts where young player steps up to be really good, they cut a vet who might have been solid last year, but they want to save some money or they want to save a roster spot for a young guy.
Jordan want to get, that'd be the guy. Is he getting?
Panthers aren't cutting him.
I don't think after paying him what they did, I don't think so either.
Yeah, to answer your question, Drew,
I haven't been paying too much attention outside of the
cut candidates are for some other NFL teams on the defensive line. That's a good question.
Instead, they'd rather bring back Carlos Dunlap, retired Carlos Dunlap, than some of the other names that we mentioned.
What's Melvin Ingram doing? Age 40-something-year-old Melvin Ingram these days.
SpotTrack's got a list of who they think are potential NFL release candidates, as in, you know, guys who they think could be surprise guys on the list. I will point out that Christian Fulton's on this list.
Yeah, they're not cutting. They're not eating that money.
And Calvin Ridley. So there's a couple of interesting names. Slayton from the Cincinnati Bengals to Darryl Slayton. I don't know who that is.
He's an interior guy. There's no chance because they have Tonga.
Bud Dupree gets a mention on here. Solomon Thomas gets a mention on here as possible guys. Ty Hamilton for the Rams gets a mention on here. There's a couple of guys. Nwosu, the edge guy for Seattle, gets mentioned on here as well. So he's a $20 million 2026 cap hit. So obviously they'd be just looking to save money. What can the Chiefs even save money if they moved on from Christian Fulton?
No, I don't think he's a cut candidate. I think they still owe him over $10 million, don't they?
I thought so too. They had him listed on here, and I was just asking.
He's a name that people have been saying maybe they could try to find a trade for. What's the
$8 million dead cap? $5 million to cut him.
Yeah, I think he's worth being on the roster still.
For that number? I just don't think you're going to get a corner that you would like to play more for $5 million, I guess, is the problem. Unless that money's going to, you know, if it gone to a, not Von Miller, because he's maybe not the right scheme fit.
I mean, if Cam Jordan was willing to leave, I think that's what he signed for, wasn't it?
No. Well, you know,
maybe
Cam Jordan was on the offseason wish list all offseason until he returned to New Orleans.
Or whatever, like Jadeveon Clowney, I don't know the number that he signed for, if it was $5 million-ish or whatever.
It was in that range.
Just for the sake of the conversation, you mentioned Omnidihu. He's actually signed by the Commanders anyway. Not that I would want him back, but he's in Washington with the Commanders. They signed Chanel, they signed Leo, and Charles Minihue in D.C. A couple former Chiefs there.
I don't know how accurate that list is. Calvin Ridley, boy, he'd be a surprise cut. Why would they cut away one guy who might actually have a chance of being decent? He had 1,000 yards 2 years ago. If you're Tennessee, you got a young quarterback. You're just going to run him out of town and just hand it all over to Carnell Tate?
They brought in Wandale, too, so I don't know if that's part of it.
I forgot Wandale Robinson. Yeah, because Brian Daboll's the OC in Tennessee, and that's the Wandale Robinson relationship. He was, of course, in New York as well.
They can't cut him. This is the one, maybe that spot track list isn't very good. They can't cut him at all. It would actually cost him more money to cut him.
No.
Unless there's some number I'm not seeing. I mean, he definitely won't be a Titan next year when he's 33 years old and they'll save $23 million. Like, I didn't realize Calvin Ridley was that old either, in fairness. He's 32? What the hell were they doing giving him that contract?
Yeah, I would have, Cody, bet that he was like 28, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
He's 32 years old.
You didn't get the bet part, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he got in trouble, did he?
Yeah, for betting, yeah.
Calvin Ridley. Oh, is he still suspended?
He was one of the guys.
This is years ago.
He was one of the guys that was in there.
He was one of the guys that got suspended for a year or so for betting.
There's been so many players now who have had these issues now recently. You forget some of them.
Yeah, between that, the people just mentioning former Chiefs on there now.
Yeah, someone mentioned Passanio or whatever. thanks, Lance, for the text. We are going to be in Vegas next week for our shows Thursday and Friday. Yep. And last year we were in Vegas. We were joking around about the first ever NFL Protector of the Year odds, which is the first ever offensive lineman award.
You might remember I bet it.
You did. You bet on Creed Humphrey. We were saying it's tough for a center to win the award. And last year, the winner was former Chief Joe Tooney, who was a guard, had a great year for the Chicago Bears. In general, we don't know what much of a track record yet for this award. This is only year two. I think tackles are going to long-term end up winning this award just because it's the more important position. But The question is, next week when we go out to Vegas, are you going to bet on Protector of the Year award again? And are you going back to the well with Creed Humphrey? Where are his odds at? Because I think he has the third or fourth best odds.
So I'll tell you right now, just based on the way that this works, he will, in my opinion, win that award once in his NFL career.
That might be true.
Yeah. I 1,000% believe that Creed Humphrey will win Protector of the Year at some point in his NFL career. Do I think it's going to go to a center this year? Feels unlikely because a guard got it last year.
I think tackle.
And so I feel like this is probably the tackle year, but I don't want to just go out there and bet the favorite in Penei Sewell. I honestly think I probably should personally bet Creed Humphrey every year until he wins it. That's my yeah, lean.
You should.
At circa, I think he's 13-1.
Creed 13-1?
He's got the fourth best odds, I believe.
Okay.
Some other names on the list. If you're going to stick with the Chiefs, you want to take a flyer on somebody and hope he plays all year. Josh Simmons, 80-1. Josh Simmons, 80-1 right now to win Protector of the Year.
He got enough name recognition. Yeah, I think you're going to have to be a name
to
win that award.
Tristan Wirfs, who's very good, but also is a name. 9-1. Garrett Bowles there with the Broncos is 11-1. Joe Alt with the Chargers, if he stays healthy, 13-1. I actually don't hate that one.
Simmons would have to go on a stretch, Cody, of like no pressures allowed for the first like 10 weeks of the season or no sacks allowed. Something crazy.
That won't do it. I'm just telling you right now.
You still don't think so?
You know for, I think we can all know for a fact, even though there's only been 1 year of this award, you have to be a name. Somebody offensive linemen already respect and know about in order to win the award.
That's why Penei Sewell's favored by so much.
Last year, by the way, despite the fact that Chiefs stunk, Creed Humphrey was still a finalist for the award.
Yeah, because so he's like, one of the best, if not the best center
was,
in football. Yeah.
He was, you know, he was a finalist. It was Garrett Bowles, center Aaron Brewer, center Creed Humphrey, Quinn Meinerds, Joe Tooney, and Penei Sewell. So, like, there were two offensive tackles, two guards, two centers. Which I'll guess, based on the fact that it's a panel full of offensive linemen who played all five spots, that it'll probably end up being something close to that every single year. I'm going to bet Creed again. I'm betting Creed to win Protector of the Year until the guy wins it. He is one of the best protectors. He's a future Hall of Fame center. Why not? I'm going to bet him again.
I know a guard won it last year, but I still think in most years the safest bet is going to be to pick a tackle or two and bet on the tackles. I just think the nature of the position. You're right about name recognition, but I also think tackles. That's just, we know the importance of it. That's the position that everybody highlights. It's pretty rare, honestly, for a guard to get highlighted. So the fact that Joe Tooney won it in year one speaks to how good he's been throughout his entire NFL career. Yeah. And he was on a Bears team that got a lot of pub and recognition. The good news for Creed's case, or even Josh Simmons' case, is that they're going to be talked about all year. They're going to be in multiple primetime games. That'll help. And this year, you're protecting a quarterback coming off an ACL injury. If you do a great job at that, I think that can help Josh Simmons' case. When we go to Vegas, I might put like $10 on Simmons at 80-1.
So you're going to put something on Simmons. I'll put something on Creed
just for the hell of it.
Yeah. I will not be betting on Orlando Brown Jr.
Sorry, you probably should not. And when we're out there, we'll have to keep an eye. Cyrus Allen's odds for Rookie of the Year, separate award, have dropped. He was 80-1. He's 60-1 now.
Is that what he is?
He's 60-1. I don't know about sir. This is that FanDuel.
Where does that put him? Around him, I guess, that we would know.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 3, 6. So he's like 20 or something on the list.
Still, though, for a fourth round pick or whatever he was, I mean, to have those odds is kind of crazy.
17th best odds to win Offensive Rookie of the Year.
60-1 is
week
fun,
one, in week one against the Broncos on Monday Night Football, if he has 65 yards and a touchdown, all of a sudden he's going to be 15-1 very quickly.
Yeah.
That's the name of the game. That's why it's like,
I still don't think
there's good value on that ticket, even if I don't think it's going to win it. You know?
I don't think he's capable statistically of winning it, but it's a fun flyer.
Didn't Puka Nacua not win in his rookie year?
No, he did. Remember CJ Stroud? He didn't because CJ Stroud. Didn't. Yeah,
Puka Nacua had 1,500 yards his rookie year.
Because CJ was breaking records
and didn't win it.
Stroud had the best season for a rookie quarterback in NFL history at the time. The good news this year for non-quarterbacks Offensive Rookie of the Year is there's only one quarterback really that can win it. And it's Fernando Mendoza, who has the second best odds. We don't know when he's going to play, but that's the tricky thing. Even if Mendoza doesn't play till week 8, if he comes in week 8 or 9 and he just looks decent, he's going to become the favorite. And then, of course, you got Jeremiah Love, who's still the favorite despite the high ankle sprain.
What would it take for Cyrus Allen to win it? Because you're just thinking how many touches Jeremiah Love is going to have.
Mendoza to not get in till after week 10 for starters.
Jeremiah Love to start slow.
And then Cyrus Allen to be a 900 plus yard guy.
I think it'd have to be at least 1,000. I could be wrong. Small move in the NFL, by the way. The Bills are adding some secondary help. They've signed former Bills safety Taylor Rapp to their
they're bringing him back.
Roster. Bringing back Taylor Rapp. The Broncos have signed him, not the Bills.
Oh,
Broncos. Okay, sorry. You said
the Bills are bringing back Bill. Yeah,
former Bills safety.
Former
Bills
safety signed with the Broncos.
I got you.
So something in the division. Taylor Rapp heading to the Denver Broncos.
How old is he? I think
he's got
their
age
too.
Yeah, yeah.
He's 28. Never mind.
What?
God,
he's 28, but Calvin Ridley's 32.
I'd have had those backwards. If you'd have made me guess. It might be because Taylor Rapp has just been one of those players like Matt Milano.
Does he have a bad rap? Is that what you're saying?
He's just been hurt. Yeah. He's just been hurt a lot. He only played 6 games last year for Buffalo.
All right. Up next, guys, let's talk more about Andy Reid, who spoke to the media. And then once again, a yearly conversation has come up about Andy Reid and his future. We'll also discuss what the Raiders are already asking for with their new stadium. Next. 11 o'clock hour here on Cody and Gold. Reminder, 1 hour from now, we have things off to Vern for his On Deck show as the Royals continue their series against the A's right here on 96.5 The Fan. We will get right back into the Chiefs in just a second, including a question that is coming up yet again around Andy Reid. It's an annual occurrence at this point. We'll also, in the Chiefs Red half hour here in a half hour, discuss more about Ashton Gelati, the unfortunate news after practice today. Andy Reid announcing that Ashton Gelati has a ruptured plantar fascia in his right foot. And so that's going to take some time. We don't know an exact timeline, but I think we all know it's not something that's going to be good in a week or two. So how does that impact the season? We'll get back into that more. But before we get to any of that, you just did a little investigation during the break. You were on to something earlier this morning. We, of course, have been up in St. Joe. We are back in studio. And last Friday, we had a fan club. We had a couple guests in. We had one of our listeners. We had Matt Foster in studio as well. And so we had our headphones moved around. And when we were in St. Joe, you don't need your headphones. We have our broadcast headsets. So you left your headphones in the studio.
So I was like, well, I got in here and I was like, oh no, my headphones aren't in my bag as we're getting ready to start the show. And then I remembered that I let a listener borrow them last week. And I was like, oh, okay, you know what? No big deal. I let a listener borrow them last week. They're in the studio. And I want to point out that before I even did some sleuthing, I said, oh man, I left my headphones in the studio. And I knew that that was a mistake because that meant Carrington Harrison would go about trying to steal them. And I'm like, you know what? Probably just being paranoid. And yet I let my paranoid brain win, Drew. So what did I do? I found myself popping on the old 96.5 The Fan feed. Over on YouTube.
You did some investigation.
Over on YouTube, you can pop on the feed. You can see old shows. And what do I see on Monday? And then again on Tuesday? And then again on Wednesday? And what I saw was Carrington wearing my headphones. Even though he knew they weren't his, he just saw, cool, headphones in the studio, popped them on his head, and then has been storing them over here where he keeps his own headphones. He just took them and just started using them for 3 days.
So where are they?
They're on my head
now. So they're back. They never left.
No, but he was just using them with no... Because he usually steals Scott Parks' headphones. Yeah. Kids, I want to be very clear. This is not pocket watching. Carrington, without even knowing how much money he makes, makes enough money to purchase headphones. I am at least confident of that one thing. And if not, I get Chick-fil-A once less this week or whatever the hell it takes.
I have enough money to purchase headphones.
Jeez.
Why are you using my headphones?
I didn't want to take it there, but...
And I will say headphones...
This has happened ever since... I've been here 3 years now. Yeah. This has been an occurrence.
For 7 years.
Carrington has been doing afternoons for 15 years,
Come
I think.
On,
I think Carrington's been doing afternoons for 15 years in this market.
I think he's been borrowing headphones for 15 years.
And I don't think he's ever bought his own pair of headphones. It's pretty crazy. It really is.
It's a seek help moment. You got to stop... And I will say, like, for a one-off, every once we'll do this... Headphones are a very personal thing in the sense that these have been
a very
on,
personal thing.
I wear these 20 hours a week, 50 weeks a year. I put these on for 900 to 1,000 hours a year. I don't want somebody else's head on.
Yeah, you've sweat all around the earbuds and everything as well. That's true. Everybody always, whenever we bring up this topic, people say, how come the station doesn't get them? That's just a radio. That doesn't matter what station I've ever worked at. Everybody provides their own headphones. Like no station buys you your
headphones. No station I've ever worked at.
That's just not, for whatever reason, that's just never been a thing. So it's just known that everybody has their own headphones. Plus everybody likes different ones. Some people do like the in-ear ones. Yeah. I can't do that for 4 hours. It would drive me crazy. My ears would hurt. So we all kind of like the over-the-ear ones. They're just more comfortable. Yeah. We all have different ones. Look, these are like $40 ones on Amazon. I've had for 2 years. I mean, they're not fancy ones. It doesn't take much. So yes, Carrington was borrowing your headphones. I'm not surprised.
They die like once every year or 2 years. and I throw the old ones in the trash and I buy new ones. And somehow Carrington has managed to go 15 full years without popping over to Target to buy a pair. I couldn't believe it.
Someone said Carrington might as well have used your toothbrush.
Genuinely. And also, why would he want the, like, 900,000 hours of these things on my ears? Why do you want to wear them?
Someone says, Cody, he's not stealing them. He's borrowing them, then. Why are you saying he's stealing? So he's upset with your, someone's upset with your word.
My characterization?
Your word usage there, yeah.
I think he, you know why?
Scott Parks hear this early, because we could have him in here as well to vent.
Because I think if I had given him free rein, I think he would have stolen them. That's why.
Oh, well, that's...
You're saying if you would openly said he can have them, then he absolutely would not say, no, they're yours. He would take them.
Yeah, but the difference is, like, Carrington's never going to take them. Theft is different for Carrington in this scenario because he doesn't take evidence out of the studio.
How about this?
They don't leave the building. Mine leave the building.
We don't need to do this because, as you said, he should have his own pair. Today is Carrington's birthday, by the way. Happy birthday to Carrington. Happy birthday.
I'm going to clip this and tag. Actually, I'm going to go back and clip it.
It is happy birthday, Carrington.
Oh, happy birthday, Carrington. Sorry, man. I didn't realize it was your birthday. I could have saved this for a different day.
It is his birthday today.
I immediately feel bad.
Yeah, it is. It is his birthday. I'm like 99% sure. Maybe you can get him a pair of headphones for his birthday.
Someone said from the text line, they will donate a pair of Skullcandy headphones.
The thing is, I'm not even sure he's all that picky.
He'll steal parks.
He'll steal ones that are in the studio. He'll use headphones from anybody, anywhere in the building. So I don't think he's picky on the set of headphones.
Hang on a second. I know the pair that he that frequents a lot.
The ones Scott Parks uses might cost $15.
That's what I'm trying to find.
It's a cheap pair of headphones.
$21 at Target right now. $21.
Someone said Carrington was bragging the other day not having to buy nosebleeds at Kauffman anymore, but he's not buying headphones. He's got to allocate his funds elsewhere, I guess. I don't know.
I would just point out, like, think about, like, any product, like, anything you do in your job, and the same thing I said, if you had to use a keyboard, and you had to use it 900 hours a year, and they were like, hey, you got to buy your own keyboard, you wouldn't just be like, oh, I'll just borrow Gold's every day.
Who buys their own keyboard?
I'm just using a different piece of pen.
You're trying to find any example.
If all you do is write if you're a lawyer and you have to write 900 hours a year, you'd buy a nice pen, your own pen. You wouldn't just borrow one for the rest of time.
Happy birthday, Carrington.
Happy birthday, C-Dot.
Yeah. Someone said, Cody, grow up. From the 913, it's not like you're sharing condoms.
Relax.
Wow, what kind of comp is that?
That is terrible.
We jumped to
that's a terrible comp.
That's a terrible one.
Anyway,
happy birthday.
Your headphones are here though, Carrington. They're not gone.
Someone said he does wear earbuds sometimes.
When he gets in the studio later,
if you're using other people's headphones with the earbud, that's nasty.
They're in
your ear, and there's clearly some earwax that have gotten on there. That's nasty.
Yeah, that's
should we pitch in five? Somebody said we should pitch in $5 and go buy him some of those Sony headphones for $20 at Target.
He doesn't need help purchasing them. He's an adult with an adult salary. He can purchase his own. This is not one of those like. Drew's a producer at the station, and a suit costs $200. This isn't one of those scenarios.
Thank you to the text line.
He can swing the $20. Uh-huh. Hey, you know what? Maybe he got a birthday card from his mom, and it had $20 in it. Ah, thanks, Mom. A little birthday cash. I got a great idea how you could burn a hole in your pocket.
Someone just suggested you give him the current ones you're wearing, and then if you just buy yourself a new pair.
I am going to buy a new pair soon.
Well, then just give him those.
I'd rather throw them in the garbage.
Oh, no. Why do that? Just give him a pair.
You know what it is?
You want to make an example out of it is what it is. Exactly. You'd rather throw them out than donate them to Carrington.
It is accepting that behavior, and I won't do it. I'll go buy a new pair of headphones today as soon as I throw these directly into the dumpster outside. It's about setting an example, you know? You gotta set an example.
It's another one of those father-son moments, Goldwear.
Yeah. You leave your bike outside, your dad's... Yeah.
He's trying to teach Carrington a lesson here.
Your parents ever tell you, like, if you leave your bike outside, someone's going to steal it, and then they hit it around the back of the house to make you think it was gone? It's one of those. Let's talk a little cheese football here before we talk more about Ash and Gelati later on. I saw over the Kansas City Star and the Athletic and a couple of other things. Once again, the annual, I think, and fairly annual, conversation surrounding Andy Reid's retirement came up. In reading the article again, I'll say the same thing I said last year, which is the only thing I do know is if you listen to any quote Andy Reid has ever given on the subject, he has never at any stage given any indication that he is about to retire or that he's seeing near the end or he's only a couple years away. He always makes it sound like he's 4 years down the road And he'll talk to you 3 years from now when he's only a year down the road, and it'll probably be four more years down the road on that. I don't get any sense that Andy Reid is contemplating retirement at this time, despite the fact that Florio was trying to predict 2 years ago or something insane.
Well, every Super Bowl. I mean, I remember being on Radio Row in Vegas in particular. That was like one of the number one stories. Any hit we did with another station, that one of the first questions they asked it, do you think this is the last one for Andy? And it was all fueled by Florio. And that was in Vegas, Cody. That was 3 years ago, maybe?
Yeah.
Right, when the Chiefs won in overtime? I think it's been 3 years almost, yeah. 2.5 years, whatever we're at now.
Crazy.
Which is crazy to think about. But that's where a lot of that fuel came from.
Yeah.
Look, we all know Andy Reid, of course, is on the back half, the back slope, whatever you want to call it, of his career. That's evident. However, I don't think he thinks that this year or next year is the last year or anything like that at all. We have said this over and over with this conversation that becomes a yearly thing. As long as he is physically able to coach, the guy is going to keep coaching. And as long as the results on the field continue, right? We're having a different conversation if you tell me this team is, this is not happening, in my opinion, but if they won six games again, okay, they won six last year. If they won six games again, there will be a real conversation at the end of this year whether or not, hey, is it time? Is the game passed them by? These kind of things would be a real conversation. But if this team gets back to being competitive, playoff team, viewed as one of the better teams, that stuff goes by the wayside. And then as long as he's physically able to do it, he's going to coach. It is so weird how there are other coaches in this league over the years that have been older than him, that have certainly won less games than him, that nobody questions their longevity, but people question Andy's longevity.
Look, in fairness, he is now the oldest coach in the NFL. He wasn't for a number of years because Pete Carroll and some other guys were still around. So he's the oldest coach in the NFL by 5 years. Todd Bowles is somehow 62. The second oldest coach in the NFL. Harbaugh's 62, Sean Payton's 62, and then everyone else is in their mid-50s or earlier. So he's older. He's 5 years older than any active coach in the NFL. But I'd point out that, like, Bill Belichick didn't even leave the Patriots till like 4 years after this age, Andy is actively. And so when I listen to him talk, if you made me set the over under 3.5, I'd still take the over. Because I think it is simply just one of those, and Twitch pointed it out too, it is simply one of those just barring health. Assuming he is healthy and capable of doing it, I don't think he's anywhere close to doing it. And I mentioned this on the air. I think part of the reason people think he won't be healthy enough to do it is because he's always been a slightly bigger guy. And so, like, I think in people's heads, like, well, he won't be healthy 4 years from now to do it. I think that's unfair to Andy, but I do think that that's why people predict the end sooner. He is 68. I think the end's coming sooner.
Yeah, I don't think he's coaching until he's 75 years old. I'm with you there. But also, I don't think he's got only a year left. You know, I don't think that's the case. To me right now, the only way it's cut short in the next year or two, Cody, is if the team performance starts to really slide. If they go back-to-back years missing the playoffs, there will be real conversations just whether or not you're heading in the right direction still. But that's a football reason. You're right. The people that think he's going to stop coaching Mike Florio 3 years ago, where people just thought he was just going to quit, you know, not that they were worried about where his performance was. The guy was in a Super Bowl just 2 years ago.
I think that, like, part of that is I will always point out, Andy Reid is, like, in love with the game of football, right? Always has been. It is his baby. It is the thing he has cared the most about in his entire life. He has built his entire career around it. I can't imagine a person who has dedicated every single second of their adult and youth life around this sport getting a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes and then saying, you know what? I think I'm good. I think he wants to ride out 3-4 more years of prime Patrick Mahomes before he's like giving it up. I just can't imagine. What do you do all this for? If then when that guy finally walks through the door and after all these years, these painstaking years of fighting for a trophy as an NFL head coach, that guy walks through and gets you 3 and 5 years. Now you're going to hang it up. I can't see it. You're an outsider's perspective. You didn't grow up in Kansas City. You think Andy Reid's close?
I mean, as close as in, like, within 3 years, yes. I don't think it's close as in, like, he's going to retire after this year. The weird thing, though, is, like, the Eagles got rid of Andy after they had a couple bad seasons, and he obviously had made it to all those NFC title games, made it to a Super Bowl. The fact that Andy's won it as many times as he has here, let's just use in this hypothetical, they go 7-10, and they miss the playoffs again. They aren't getting rid of him, are they? I think the conversation is going to be there, but from the standpoint of, as long as Andy's coaching Patrick Mahomes, Cody, I think if it's his choice to leave or not, he's not leaving for another couple of years. But if for whatever reason they don't make the playoffs and they decide to move on, I think Andy would be done, because I don't think he would go to start somewhere else at all.
I agree with you, but that's why I said that the conversation about his longevity is just only going to be whether or not if they miss the playoffs again this year, then there's going to be a real conversation about whether or not for football reasons. Mike Florio started all this years ago, not because he thought he couldn't coach or whatever. It was just that he thought he was too old or not healthy or whatever. He's going to retire.
That was the Florio thing.
I mean, look, very rarely in sports, whether you're a football player or a football coach or a basketball player, basketball coach, whatever, very rarely do you get to go out on your own terms. So when you have that opportunity to do it, you know, it's usually take it. Bill Belichick got fired. Essentially,
Bill Belichick couldn't go out on his own terms.
He didn't just say, I'm done with coaching, and that's why he went to North Carolina. He went to North Carolina because he wanted to prove to people he could still coach. And that's very much up in the air at North Carolina right now. Who knows what they're going to be? They open up next Saturday, as we talked about.
I just don't, against TCU. If they miss, I don't think they would. I actually don't know if the Chiefs. I'm just thinking of this now. I don't think the Chiefs would actually fire him.
No, they would mutually part ways if that day ever came. He has earned that opportunity to exit on his own terms whenever that day is.
Right.
Hopefully it's very long time from now.
Have a good enough relationship, obviously.
He could go 0-17 this year, and I don't think it'd be Andy Reid got fired.
Never. I feel confident saying this. I think you guys agree. We will never see a headline, Andy Reid fired as the head coach of the Chiefs. We are never going to see that headline. Mm-hmm.
I'm not even sure. I think they said mutually agreed to part ways for Bill Belichick. I don't even think it was a firing.
But same thing, right? He did a lot for the organization.
Maybe that one was a firing.
I don't remember.
I think we knew what it was, but I think they called it a mutually
parting. They called it a mutual and amicable parting of ways.
But behind closed doors, it was a firing, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you'll at least let Andy go out like that. But there's no scenario. Like, if they miss the playoffs this year, Andy will, for the first time in a very, very, very long time, be on, like, I would say, a hotter seat?
A lukewarm seat? A warm seat?
Yeah. But like, again, he won't be 5,000 to 1 to be the coach.
I don't think he's not going to be the head coach after this year if they miss it, just because that he has done, I don't think.
But there will be a very real conversation about whether or not he needs to be stripped of play calling if it was because of the offense, whatever. However, I don't think he would ever coach without being the play caller. So to me, that's where you would get into the stepping away stuff. This is all more football related. As far as everything else, that's still the same Mike Florio crap from 3 years ago. I don't think Andy Reid's hanging up anytime soon.
That never made any sense. He was making it seem like people around the league were all, we think Andy's going to retire. Like, by who? Who's saying that? Ghosts? Yeah. You guys got drunk at the bar and you thought? Because, like, other than that, there was
someone says if Andy did retire, even after a Super Bowl win this year or something, would they just promote from within? I don't think so.
I don't think anybody
on the staff would be the next head coach.
I don't think you could afford to simply just say, well, we got EB as the guy going. You would have to evaluate.
Or Spags.
It'd be a new staff.
Yeah, or Spags too. You'd have to evaluate your options.
I think you would go outside the organization.
Unfortunately, I guess for the Chiefs' sake, if Andy were to step away, unfortunately, it's not like college football where you can just buy out with Sean McVay's contract and be like, yo, man, come over here and coach Pat for a little bit.
I mean, you can. It just would never happen, right?
The
Chiefs traded for Dick Vermeil, remember?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I guess Sean Payton, now that was different.
They could trade for Ben Johnson. I don't know.
Sean Payton left the Saints for a year, then had to get traded to the Broncos. That's how that. So it happens, but those are rare circumstances.
We know both before we get to the trash day, we know both the Chiefs and the Royals are getting new stadiums. I saw a headline today and I thought, what? The Raiders? Yes, the Raiders, who just built a brand new stadium not that long ago over at Allegiant, are requesting over $160 million for a new renovation, making a gateway or a different entrance into the stadium in order to do it. And I thought, I'll tell you right now, and I want the new stadiums where they are. You better not be coming looking for a $200 million handout less than 10 years after you build the building. That's crazy to me. They're asking for like $80 million more in public funds. It's like $75 million out of a fund that exists, admittedly. But they're asking for that money, I feel, a touch early
to start doing
some new stuff.
I mean, we don't live in Vegas, so I don't know. This feels like this was always part of the Raiders' plan, at least, was to eventually ask for a new plaza area around Allegiant Stadium, because we've been there. The stadium itself is fine. The area around it, there's nothing next. Like, yes, the strip, but it's not like it's a 2-minute walk.
It's like nestled into a corner of streets.
If you look at the aerial shot, you think it literally is like, oh, the strip is right. No, it's still a hell of a walk to get to the strip. there's nothing right outside the stadium. There used to be a strip club there. It just closed, according to our buddy Matt, who works in Vegas.
Oh, okay. Thanks for the heads up.
We'll see him next
Matt?
Week.
Yeah, we will.
Our guy, Matt Peralt. He tweeted about it. That's the reason why I know, I swear. And so that's gone now, I guess. And they have a plaza area they want to build. There is a $75 million fund that was set aside for future renovations of Allegiant. It's just weird that it's happening this early. With new Arrowhead or whatever, with any of these new stadiums, after 20 or 25 years, they all come back and say, hey, we need another $300 million for renovation.
Sure, we do.
That always is going to happen. It's still another part of the ridiculousness of the whole public finance stuff. But 8 years after it's been built or whatever we're at now seems crazy.
2020 is when it opened.
6 years.
So it opened 6 years ago, and they're like, $160 million, please. And you're like, the hell?
Is it not even for
we
the stadium
gave you
or just the
$2 billion?
There's no way it's for the actual
just
stadium.
It's just for the like opening gateway.
So it's for like project. An entertainment district, not necessarily the stadium.
They're calling them front door upgrades, which includes a pedestrian deck, public plaza, event deck, and transportation improvements. Okay. It's not even like cool stuff. These pedestrian decks, I don't know who these are for. They must be for someone because all these stadiums keep building them. And I'm just like,
well, people want a
you want me to pay
$100 million
to... You should have built that the first time.
And a safe way to walk in.
Are you just now learning a highway's near here? You're just figuring that out? You thought there were going to be people at the stadium? What a wild notion.
No, I'm with you. I think it's ridiculous after 6 years they're asking for the money. My guess, though, is that this was always part of the plan for that stadium. That's all.
It just seems crazy that 6 years after they need $160 million. Mm-hmm. 75 of which would come from... the authority that would create a new, that was a fund that was meant
it's
for
the Las Vegas Sports Authority yeah.
later. And then the remaining 83 would come from private funding. I will say, I don't know how they're going to end up funding that outside of it. I'd just be like, no, we're good. We're going to save that $75 million. We're going to keep it in escrow. We'll fix some stuff later.
My guess is how they get done in Vegas. The same reason why we talk about even here, but on a bigger scale, it's Las Vegas, entertainment capital of the world. They want all these other events. They're probably acting like as if they need that. That's their excuse, I'm sure.
To compete.
They didn't have the World Cup because the stadium was designed poorly. They can't bring in grass or whatever it was or something, right? Wasn't that the whole deal there in Vegas?
Oh, yeah.
They couldn't change the width of the field enough to have the World Cup. Otherwise, Vegas would have had a World Cup
this
match.
This goes back to the Buffalo thing. It's... when you are building something that costs $3 billion, shouldn't you be thinking about every contingent of any possible event?
They might
event
need some more money, too, to have some
you
renovations.
You might want to host.
Like, soon, the Bills.
No.
6 years later, they're going to be trying to get rid of those obstructed seats.
Yeah, exactly.
The worst excuse for that was from the Bills, where they're like, well, not all the seats were intended for football. It's a football stadium.
Yeah, that was stupid.
That's a crazy thing to say.
Some of them were intended only for the concert. What? It's a football stadium first.
That's its primary purpose.
Also, how many concerts are you going to have at that stadium in Buffalo? Like,
and if you're going to a concert, I like to see the whole.
Winter
I still
time,
like to see everything.
Limits. Yeah, I don't know.
It's wild. Makes no sense.
Trash of the day.
All right, we go to Los Angeles for this one. Highway 101, I believe it is. Yeah, driver,
right?
You have? All right.
Yeah,
a highway the there. Yeah, isn't that like the, is, no highway one's the one that has
oh,
like the
one, that's
highway one's the one you're thinking of the
one.
Picturesque.
I've been on the 101 too, but
the
yeah,
one is the
thinking.
Picturesque
right.
on the coast. Right. Anyway, this is 101. After California Highway Patrol officers observed a motorist traveling well below the flow of traffic in the passing lane, causing a backup. The incident occurred. It was a sedan traveling 58 miles an hour in the left lane, causing at least five vehicles to pass on the right. The driver was cited for a violation of their California vehicle code, which requires slower traffic to yield to the right, right? You're not supposed to be, I think this is like everywhere,
standard.
Isn't it? Right? You got to move out of the left lane. They gave him a ticket for left lane camping. I'm convinced if anybody on this show was left lane camping, we all know who it would be.
Not me. It would better be me you're talking about.
Oh, I think it would be you.
Mr. Cruise Control. I follow the traffic rules.
Drew doesn't use cruise control at all, but I think you've told us you're using cruise control nonstop.
I am a follower
everywhere.
Of traffic rules, so why would that be the one that I broke? If anything, this drive down from St. Joe is going to send me into psychosis of this.
Are we
every single day
the reason
coming
why we
down
think this
I-29.
Is because the way that we're picturing this is this individual had cruise control on going like 55 in a 70.
They had
cruise control on. And you use cruise control more than anybody. Use cruise control going 40.
Now, yeah, I will use cruise control.
So I think that of all people, it fits that it would make sense. You would be the one to use cruise control.
Not
and
to
you'd be locked
in.
I'm glad they ticketed this person, though.
Me too. The only thing I will say is, like, I will, like, if I'm going like let's say I'm speeding up. We're heading down I-29. I'm trying to get ahead of all these cars in the left lane because the semis are slowing it down. And I've got it up to 80.
Yeah.
Let's just say. And there's someone like, and I'm actively getting ready to pass cars, and there's someone like riding your ass. I'm not getting out of the way for you, pal. I'm going 10 miles an hour above the speed limit. I don't have to get out of the way for you. I'm passing in the left lane.
Oh, if you're already...
I totally agree with that, Cody, if you're actively
passing, yes. I thought you were just saying, like, you're going fast enough already, you're not going to get
no,
over.
No, I'll just get out of the way. All right. I passed you yesterday.
You were going too slow, man. Get the hell out of the way.
You were going... I was going, I think, at that time. I was going relatively quick. I was going... I'll say this. Drew, I was going above the speed limit.
Well, so was I.
And Gold was still flying by.
I was sick of driving on I-29. I was driving still safely. I'm still safe. Don't make it seem like it wasn't a safe speed. I wasn't going 90 miles an hour. You're making it seem like I was. I was going above the speed limit, but I was still in, the very safe range, the normal range of that 10-ish above.
10-ish.
Ish being the operative word, depending.
Might have been 15 over at one point, but yeah.
This is, and like maybe if you're a long, I know we have a lot of people who do like long haul driving and stuff. Sports Radio is really good for that. I need one thing to be explained to me. Is there a reason why it wouldn't be safer or better? This is what happens on the highway coming down. Speed limit 65 miles an hour. The semi truck who's probably speed restricted is going 60.
Okay.
I then get stuck behind the semi truck passing the guy going 60. And based on how quickly he passed him, must be going 61 miles an hour.
Could you not just
stay behind that guy long enough for me to get out of your way? And then you can get past him? Or is it, look, there's maybe a bigger point to it that I don't understand. But I feel like you just like at the speed at which you're passing this person, I'm not sure it qualifies as passing. If there was a way, if you could just wait until I got past, that'd be great.
I mean, they want to pass the truck in front of them.
I know.
But no, the worst is when they're both basically going the identical speed and you're just like, someone decide what we're doing here. Let's go.
I think the text line's wrong from the 816. I know Cody's an awful driver and I've never seen him drive.
In Cody's defense, we've gone on a road trip together before. But Cody's a good driver. I just think the cruise control on side streets is insane.
I do think that there's a level of that makes it crazy. But that doesn't mean you're a bad driver because of it, though. Yes.
Drew, I think we don't have to revisit the whole conversation.
I don't think you're a bad driver,
but I think you would drive me crazy on a road trip, especially if we were following you. Because you don't keep a constant speed, because you're not on cruise control.
I think I do a solid job of keeping this. I'm cognizant, though. I think of what speed I'm going. Where I try to stay in a range of like 5 miles. Like if I'm going, the speed limit's 70. I try to stay within the range of 68 to 75.
Yeah, I think and that's cool. But I think the issue would be, I got cruise control set at 73. Let's say you are passing me going 75, then 5 minutes later, because you're not on cruise, you're suddenly going 71, and then I'm passing you. That's a problem. Stick with one damn speed. That's what I'm discussing.
I really hate
but if you're passing someone and then
passing me and then me passing them. I'm like, what are we doing here? This is the worst.
If I'm going up a hill, you are passing me because I don't have cruise control on. And I'm in I'm not getting down to 5 miles per gallon to haul it up a hill 70. That ain't happening.
No cruise control is wild.
Nope.
All right, up next, guys, let's get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. And someone that doesn't have enough exposure on television is apparently getting even more exposure, more than yesterday's update. That's next.
Hey, it's Josh Simmons from the Kansas City Chiefs, and welcome into the Chiefs Red Half Hour every day at 11:30 on Cody and Gold on your home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
It is the Chiefs Red Half Hour. We'll talk more about Ashton Gelati, who unfortunately has a ruptured plantar fascia in his right foot. We don't have an exact timeline, but major ramifications for the defensive line, including what it now means for R. Mason Thomas, perhaps more Emmanuel Ogba. We'll get into that in just a bit. A reminder, in 25 minutes, we're handing things off to Vern. Josh Vernier's On Deck show coming up as the Royals get set to wrap up their series against the A's right here on 96.5 The Fan. Before we went to break, we mentioned, we were kind of joking about it because we had an update yesterday on Pat McAfee is going to be part of the Monday Night Football pregame show, and the first Monday Night Football game of the year is Chiefs-Broncos. So McAfee's first pregame on Monday night will be here at Arrowhead in Kansas City. And then right when we were going to break, Andrew Marchand, who covers sports business kind of stuff, he's reporting that ESPN is in talks with the NFL about creating a Pat McAfee Monday Night Football altcast with McAfee and his crew likely working the weeks when Peyton and Eli's Manning cast is off.
Well, the good news is that's an optional one and I don't have to watch it. So
yes. So I will say this about all the altcast. This is not unique to McAfee or the Manning cast. You know, I've been kind of on the record with the altcast that I'm only interested in those when the game sucks. So if it's a good game, if it's the fourth quarter, it's a one score game, I want the actual play-by-play, old school broadcast. Give me, I guess, Aikman and Buck in that scenario, and I'm good. I love the Manning cast, and I think I'll be entertained by McAfee when it's a crappy game. If it's the third quarter and it's a 20-point lead and I'm bored, or it's just an ugly football game, that's the only time I have any interest in any of them. I don't care if it's McAfee, the Mannings. I don't care. It's the alt cast to me are just filler for bad football.
I prefer this to I'm being forced to watch McAfee in a million places. I would just, I'm good. Like I've had it. I'm at my fill and have been, I would say 78 shows ago or whatever. At least in an alt cast case, this feels like one of those ones I can't really complain about in the sense that Gold, I just have to never turn it on. It's not a problem for me, you know? If I want to watch, if I'm not entertained by the game, I'll just stop watching the game before I go to the McAfee all cast. And so that part of it, at least it's optional, but my God, this is a maximum exposure point. How many more things can he be on? How much more time could be in his schedule?
He's already there though, right? I mean, I guess he's already there. You know, he's on the pregame show for Monday Night Football, and he's already going to be at some of these games, so they're just going to add it to it. But he's the face of ESPN, and he's making $80 million a year. They're going to work him to death, and that's where it's at. I'm not even – it's not me telling you that I need him to be on more stuff. I just get why ESPN's doing it, and the alt cast doesn't bug me because I truly don't really watch many of them to begin with.
No, yeah, that it bothers me less than the one yesterday where he's going to be in the crew where, you know, at halftime – that's a little less easy to just like go away from it, or I'm less likely to go away from it. And this is, again, it can be a lot of different things. He obviously is very popular. He has a massive audience. So I understand where I stand in the minority of this. I'm good on all things McAfee for a while. And some of that is absolutely exposure. As in, I've seen far too much of this one person and I don't need them in everything. This goes back to like even people who I think do a good job. Like we talk about Kirk Herbstreit. Kirk has enough jobs. I don't need him on Thursday Night Football. I don't think he does as good of a job there. Maybe it's, I don't need Ryan Seacrest on Wheel of Fortune. Maybe sometimes people just have enough jobs. And I don't need to see him on every single thing I consume. I imagine this is how some people feel about ads that include certain people that seemingly are on everything, right? Like, you're like, boy, Shaq's got a lot of ads.
I just think it's simply that they cut him a check for, you know, north of 60.
And they're trying to get the money.
And they're,
yeah,
they're going to have him be part of everything. They paid him that salary for a reason. The same way when Stephen A. Smith got his massive contract, he's on everywhere. Same reaction to that. He's oversaturated as well. This is not not everything has to have some deeper meaning to it. Just, I think over time, anybody that's saturated as much as they are, like these two individuals, and they both happen to work at ESPN in this case, that's the reaction that you start to get, right?
ESPN likes to get their money's worth,
you know.
That's
so
the one
anyway
thing we realize
that's just the new news there. All right, let's update you on the Chiefs injury front. We mentioned that Ashton Gelati has a ruptured plantar fascia. When we've been discussing it throughout the show today, we said, hey, what does this mean? We don't know a timeline yet, but this is a significant blow. Maybe it causes R. Mason Thomas to have to play way more than they want early on in the year. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's not. Nate Taylor, our Chiefs insider, did have this tweet out. We'll pass it along. He said he's hearing in the Chiefs' initial evaluation, they are optimistic that Ashton Gelati, who ruptured his plantar fascia, could return in about 3 weeks. If his rehab goes well, Gelati would have a chance to be available September 14th to play on opening night against the Broncos. Now, that's the reporting from Nate Taylor. He's well-connected. I hope that's right. That seems, not aggressive, from him, but from the Chiefs, very optimistic.
Yeah.
So that's great news if that's the case. I hope that's the case. I hope he's ready Monday Night Football. That just seems very optimistic. That's all for a plantar fascia injury. That's all.
If I look at that timeline and I assume that's the most possible optimistic timeline, which Nate Taylor's told us the Chiefs are always going to give you publicly, well, then I feel pretty good to say that he probably should be back by the bye week. So it's not, you and I were talking like maybe be the end of October. Maybe we'd be into November. Who knows how long this injury could keep someone out. But if they're saying there's at least today on August 20th, the possibility of playing on September 14th, well, then
that's awesome. Yeah.
By the time the bye week hits around in week six, that means Gelati's not going to miss an amount of time where the pressure to maybe go sign someone feels a little bit less, or the pressure on the entirety of the season of this is another defensive lineman you need in order to be available is a little bit less. And if we pointed out, other than the Denver Broncos game one at home at Arrowhead, those first few weeks aren't that bad. Colts, Dolphins, I mean, those are winnable, easily winnable games. Should be winnable games.
Let me ask you guys this. In this scenario, let's hope he plays week one. But let's say they say, hey, one more week. And so he's ready week two, which is still great. Is R. Mason Thomas getting the most snaps on the edge on that side opposite Karlaftis, or is it Steve Spagnuolo leaning on the veteran and it's Emmanuel Ogba actually play more? I want it to be R. Mason Thomas, but we've been around this defense enough to know that they lean on veterans more early on. I think Ogba will play way more than we think if Jelani doesn't play week one.
So it should be not Ogba. I'd prefer FAU to that. Would I be surprised if Felix Anidike Uzama or Ogba had more snaps than R. Mason Thomas week one or two? No. No. I've been around Spags. He played Mike Edwards more than he played Jaden Hicks last year in some games. So would I be stunned if it was the veteran? No. The veteran it should be is Felix.
I'm not sure about that, though. I mean, Ogba or Felix, I'll be honest, I don't know if there's much of a difference there. I mean,
Ogba rated worse than Mike Dana last year.
And Felix has had how many years to show anything?
I know. I mean, he was hurt most of last year, so we didn't get a chance to see him. I feel like there's still a difference in quality there, isn't there?
I don't know if there is.
Fair. Maybe I don't care that much which one it is. The answer is, will a veteran have more snaps than R. Mason Thomas? Even though I would, if you let me choose right now, one of the guys of those three gets 60% of the snaps and the other guys get 40 on the edge or 50%. And the other two guys share the 50%. I'd vote for R. Mason Thomas right now. I would let young players take their lumps. But if you're making me guess, I'm assuming it's a veteran.
We're on the same page on what I want to have. Well, I want Jelani to be healthy and play week one. But if he's not healthy in week one, no, I want R. Mason Thomas playing as many snaps possible right away and see what the kid's got. But I'm just saying, under Steve Spagnuolo, we have seen they tend to lean more with the veterans. And so my guess is that we would see a lot more Ogba than we necessarily want to see.
Is there a possibility that if they do play R. Mason Thomas for whatever reason, and he plays really well, that he's the guy going forward, and when Ashton Jelani comes back, that he's just a fill-in?
He could Wally Pippen immediately. It wouldn't if he had a sack in his first game or a sack and three pressures or whatever, Drew, he could, it'd be that almost instantaneously, if my guess.
But again, Nate Taylor reporting, he's hearing from the Chiefs, they're optimistic, could return in 3 weeks, Jelani, and has a chance if rehab goes well. There's a lot of if, could in there, right, from the Chiefs' point of view.
I think best case scenario.
It is absolutely, I think, best case scenario. They're just not ruling him out for week one yet, essentially, is what's happening.
Hey, at least
which
3 weeks
is
a, I mean, their initial diagnosis. Now, look, he's got to not have a setback, and he's got to recover well, and he's got to work hard in his rehab. And all that other stuff, certainly. But yeah, I think
the best part about that report is the best part about that report is that even if he's not able to make it by week one, he's not missing half the season. And you know what I mean? I think we can probably say that, which is a lot better than what maybe the initial reaction was to it. So good stuff there from Nate Taylor.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And that's the best case news we probably could have gotten on it today.
Now, you mentioned something to us. I don't know, maybe on Tuesday's show. I think it was a random question or Monday. And you were asking how concerned should you be about a meeting you have coming up? And that's today.
I forgot about it. Well, I put on a shirt with buttons. So put on pants. So I didn't want to show up in shorts and a t-shirt, Drew, you know. I gotta look presentable.
Yeah. We're off the show at noon today, 15 minutes.
Yeah, correct.
And you informed us earlier in the week you have a meeting with the dean of your, I don't know if it's communications corps, J School at UMKC.
She's in charge of the communications.
Okay, communications. Okay. Uh-huh. And you were maybe a little nervous. We were saying, I think it's about the syllabus being too long. I think it's about you skipping class already in week one. Do you feel good today? And yes, you are dressed up nicer because of that. Someone texted in and said the morning show was wondering why you and I are both wearing pants today instead of shorts. Honestly, we've been wearing shorts outside nonstop. It's comfortable wearing I have some comfortable pants on today. I don't know. Yeah, that's no reason. We didn't text each other. And
I think Mac even mentioned
it. They were surprised we were both wearing pants.
Something about being able to be in the AC and
it's not 100 degrees, you know? I don't know.
If it were going to be 100 degrees outside today, I probably would have still done shorts.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's going to be like in the 80s or whatever.
These are very comfortable. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's fine. Am I a little worried about how that might go? I mean, a little. I'll say this. I have been teaching at UMKC now for what, 3 years?
Is that right?
I started teaching in 24, I think. So the full 24, 25, maybe this is beginning of year three.
All right.
Something like that at UMKC. I've never once been requested to have a meeting with her.
Yikes.
So
that is a
matter of fact, our interview before she hired me for the job might have been 15 minutes. And then they were like, you're our guy. Now, I had to send over a bunch of stuff before that. But I mean, it was not, I would say the interview process was relatively like low stakes. Or
do you think she's going to say you can't talk about the class as much on the show?
That'd be a real bummer. I kind of like being able to talk about the teaching. She's going to kill Professor Tapp as the segment.
Mm-hmm.
No more.
We didn't kill that. No, I'm just kidding.
We usually only do it during the school year.
Okay.
Someone says Cody's getting fired today. A week before
he's not getting fired.
Class starts on that's Tuesday.
He's not getting fired. I just wonder if she's everything. Going to go over some things that she would like you to do this year. Instead.
Some ways to improve.
Mm-hmm.
Put me on a pip. Am I on a pip?
Well, the fact that you haven't had a meeting with
performance
with
review
her
right
in
now,
2 years.
Weird.
I don't. Yeah, it could be performance review. It could also just be a catch up of how things have gone over the last couple of years. Like if you feel like you're changing anything, is there anything new that you're doing that's different than you were originally? I don't know.
Yeah. Or it's like, tell me how I can help you be better at what you do.
Which is essentially saying you're not doing a good enough
Please
job.
Tell me how I can help. That crap.
She's very nice. Anytime I've met with her, but.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel like I should be at least a little concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have, I'm curious.
Nobody likes to meet with the boss.
I don't think you do, but do you have, I can't remember. I've been to your house one time. Do you have an office?
No.
I was going to say, are you like the other academia professors who have their diplomas just hanging up on the wall when you first walk in?
He doesn't have an office.
So you don't have office hours anywhere?
Nope. I technically am supposed to make office hours available on my thing. It just says that they're like, arrange a time.
Oh, that might be what this meeting's about, actually. You need to have office hours.
Office hours? I don't have an office.
Well, yeah, but that,
how am I supposed to have office hours?
But in college, we had that. Not everybody had an office.
Office hours means like available for email. Like you're literally just sitting at your available to chat with, email, answer questions.
All right. Did someone leave a bad review on ratemyprofessor.com for you yet? Is that what happened?
I don't think he's up there yet.
If somebody did it, I wasn't up there the last time we looked. So maybe somebody finally did it.
About a month or two ago, I thought.
We looked about, it was a few weeks ago we brought it up, and I still didn't have any ratings. I still don't have any ratings. Rate My Professor says...
When I go to Corsicle, your name comes up.
Uh-oh. What's that?
Recent semester's teaching.
What's Corsicle? Corsicle?
I don't know. you have a profile.
Mm. Did you make a
view Cody's 2026 fall classes?
Oh,
here they are. Comms 363 podcast and audio production Tuesdays and Thursdays 4:00.
How does it know all that stuff?
It was very easy to find.
I don't like this at all.
Very easy.
This is way too easy to find.
It took me 2 seconds. Yeah.
No, somebody said that maybe this is about the basketball coaching situation to be an assistant coach. So help me if you walk into this meeting and Mark and
Cody, there's some reviews. I have good news for you
on Corsicle.
I found one review. You're gonna. This is actually good for you.
Oh God.
Unfortunately, it's positive. Wait.
It's
now. This is from 3 years ago. Were you teaching this yet, or is this a prior professor?
I taught at Avila too.
Okay. It just says. Comms 363 podcast audio production professor review 3 years ago from a student named Peggy. Ring a bell?
This is a different teacher.
All right, because clearly it's a different teacher. What I'm about to read because it's too positive.
I think I remember someone named Peggy.
It says it's so amazing to have an active reporter as a professor.
I mean,
the professor's name was Peggy. I'm sorry.
So it's
definitely not you. But it's under the same class, and then it lists a bunch of other professors that teach the same class as you. There's reviews for two of the other professors, none for you. I'm sorry.
That's too bad.
So help me,
the prior
Cody,
was
that
this class
in,
is composed of spontaneous assignments with unclear requirements. That was a different professor.
Cody, so help me. If you walk into this meeting and Mark Turgeon is sitting next to this woman, it is... You have to text us.
Yeah, I don't think that's going
to
happen.
Someone says maybe they're going to review to lower your voice, disturbing other classes nearby.
Actually, I'm on like a corner.
Nobody else is nearby.
There's my classroom. The one door connected to my classroom is empty. There's nothing in it at all. And then the room connected to that is the women's center on campus.
Your class is
so
also
at them a, complaining about it. Other than that, I'm to a hallway.
Your class is also at a time where it's later in the day anyways. There's a lot of, like, I had a couple of evening classes, and there was nobody.
Yeah.
Around like
someone
that.
Says Peggy's actually Cody's replacement. I just haven't told you yet.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, can we get this a lot? Because someone's like, can we record this meeting, please, and play it on the air tomorrow? I wish we could. That'd be amazing.
Oh, man.
Cody's off tomorrow. Logan's actually going to be in with me.
Yeah. I'm going to my brother's lake house at the Ozarks.
Yeah. They got a boat? You going on a boat?
They do have a boat. They have a nice boat. They bought a new one like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. I don't know.
Ozarks, nice weekend. That'll be good.
So,
Logan's in tomorrow.
You were very happy to be leaving St. Joe then. I mean, you went from St. Joe
half show to the lake?
Yeah.
Trust me, I'm the relief when I got back. St. Joe, like, the drive, it just makes for longer days, all that other stuff. You're sitting out in the heat. You're like, you just kind of like, it kind of wears you down mentally a little bit. And now half show and then the lake, I'll be good.
Vegas next week.
I'll feel refreshed by Monday, I hope. You know? No guarantee, but I'm hoping so. Somebody says maybe UMKC needs a new jingle.
Oh, gosh.
Somebody says they're actually going to buy you the Argentina studio for you to teach your class out of. You know? We'll see. I got offered to be in a commercial for UMKC once, but I was it was during our show. UMKC has a television ad, and I was offered to be in it.
And you said yes or no?
No, it was during the show.
Oh, during the show.
It was during the show and on very short notice. Ooh. So like, almost like a not, you know, an invitation. You ever get to those? You ever get one of those like what I call an invitation, which is essentially they invite you, but based on the timing in which they invite you, the circumstance in which you invite you, you can tell they don't really want you there. Felt like maybe one of those.
Before we get out of here, we were talking about golf before the show.
Yeah.
Of course, the Advent Health Championship's going on this weekend in Kansas City, but the BMW Championship's going on in St. Louis. Do you see who's leading? Two-stroke lead?
No.
Early going?
Mr. Woodland.
Gary Woodland.
Oh, okay.
Local ties, KU grad, Gary Woodland. Good dude.
Recovering from brain cancer? Is that what he had?
Yeah. Or brain tumor.
Was it a brain tumor? I can't remember exactly what it was.
But,
yeah, brain surgery. That I remember.
Brain tumor it was.
Okay.
Just a good dude also. Anyway, he's got a two-stroke lead at the BMW Championship. Keep
good
an eye on that heading into the rest of the weekend.
Obviously very early in the tournament.
Yes. But still. He's through 10, 4-under. He's just two strokes up on, I think it's Justin Thomas. Yeah.
And you got to remember, this is a pretty good field because it's for, there's the Tour Championship stuff.
Yeah.
It's the playoffs. I mean, this is a good field.
I think the BMW, if I remember, it's top 70 in the world, like top 70 in the world rankings.
Or is that what it is?
In the FedEx
and it's
Cup
down
rankings.
To the top.
Sorry.
It's down to the top, like what?
It goes down to the top 30, I think, yeah.
Next week?
When you go to East Lake, if it's still there for the Tour Championship.
In Atlanta.
Someone said, did Cody actually request tomorrow off in case he gets fired from teaching some time to mourn? That'll just change the weekend plans, maybe, you know? Someone says, if I get fired, can I call in? Sure.
Yeah, he will.
They fire me tomorrow, I feel like it'd only be right on this show. If they say, no more teaching at UMKC for you.
Someone says they want their money back. It's not been a half hour of Chiefs. Whenever we have a short show like this, the Chiefs Red half hour gets truncated. So,
but, there was quite a bit of Chiefs.
Also, if you're paying for the show, I want to know who you're paying. You're getting ripped off. You shouldn't be paying. You know, it's free to listen. You can turn away anytime.
Listen, maybe we could talk to you if you.
Yeah.
But today we're off at noon or now, so the Red half hour was a different version on a normal day. Tomorrow, I promise you at least 20 minutes of Chiefs in the Red half hour.
I like that you won't promise the full 30, but 20.
No, yeah. Well, technically we're cheating. 25. It's not actually a half hour. Don't tell anybody. It's only 25 minutes technically. Don't tell anybody. All right, Vern's coming up next. Also, Cody, I think, has a bet for Vern during pregame today. Royals and A's right here on 96.5 The Fan.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.